Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophonous cavalcade of conversation. Hope things are well so far in your corner of the universe. 2021 has started off right where 2020 left off, kind of bumpy, to put it mildly, but here at least we can take our minds off the turmoil for a few hours, and tonight we have an excellent program in mind for you. You've been reading about this strange object spotted in space back in 2017. Oumuamua is the name it was given, and scientists were ready to write it off as an interesting but not exceptional piece of space rock. That is, until a Harvard astronomer and some colleagues detected problems with that explanation. They think it's an anomaly and could be an extraterrestrial probe sent from another solar system, the first interstellar object ever detected, perhaps sent here on purpose to get our attention. Dr. Avi Loeb has taken on a lot of grief over this hypothesis, but he's doubled down on it, and he joins us tonight in the second half. I'm pretty jazzed about that. But first, there is a stirring and provocative new series on Netflix. Have you seen it yet? It's one of the most popular programs on Netflix right now. It's called Surviving Death, a six-part documentary series looking for evidence that life goes on after physical death. The stories told by people who've experienced near-death experiences where they die and then come back, it's powerful stuff. But in other episodes, the producers look for compelling stories of kids who have memories of past lives, also looking at ghost hunters and mediums who say that they're able to connect with the other side. Leslie Kane is a journalist, author of the book we profiled here on this program a few years ago, same title, Surviving Death, and it really did a great job of synthesizing the case for human consciousness surviving physical death. Leslie is part of the team that created the Netflix series. She will join us momentarily, and for this first hour, we're also speaking with Ricky Stern, a producer and director of the Surviving Death series. We'll dig into these stories and the people behind this hit series. Powerful stuff. Webmaster Lex Lonehood and I have pulled together our usual assortment of items and oddities culled from media around the world. We call it Knapp's News, and you can find it on the Coast to Coast AM website. Some of the stories featured tonight are directly related to our subject matter this evening. Normally, I'd list a few of them and go over some of the details, but I'm going to let you explore them on your own because we only have Ricky Stern for this first hour, so I want to get to it. I'll just say one of these stories, though, is a news report we did this past week about the UAP task force that's working on a report to Congress covering what the Pentagon has in its vaults and files regarding UFO evidence and cases. And while you're there checking out Knapp's News, please click the link that tells you how to become a Coast Insider. The cost is pennies a day. If you subscribe for a year, gives you access to a huge archive of programs and interviews, including the Art Bell Vault. You can listen anytime you want, as often as you want, and it's a great deal. Ditto for George Norrie's television program, Beyond Belief, which dives into many of the guests and topics we explore here on the radio. Available by subscription and always jam-packed with info. With that, let's assume the position. Bring in the dog and the cat and the armadillo, too cold outside for critters. Put on a pot of Joe, slide your bod into those flannel jammies and your toes into the plush bunny slippers. Plop yourself down in a comfy spot, turn down the lights and turn up the radio because we're about ready to rumble. In a moment, Surviving Death with Leslie Kane and Ricky Stern. I'm George Knapp and this is Coast to Coast AM. If you accept the view of mainstream scientists, no one gets out of here alive. When our bodies wear out, we die, and that's it, dust to dust. The idea of a soul or a consciousness or some part of us living on after physical death has mostly been left to religions, philosophers, ghost hunters and the like, mediums. But there are scattered pockets of academics who've been interested in this, have been quietly working on it. Back in 2017, journalist Leslie Kane took a deep dive into the subject in search of evidence and experts and compelling narratives. Her book, Surviving Death, inspired a six-part docu-series now on Netflix. Leslie is an independent investigative journalist, one whose work should be well-known to Coast listeners. A 2010 book, UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials, is considered a landmark in the field. She is also one of three journalists responsible for the blockbuster New York Times report back in December 2017 about the Pentagon's then-secret UFO study. That initial piece, along with some follow-ups, changed the UFO subject forever. Working with Leslie on the Netflix series is a veteran producer and director, Ricky Stern, who's a co-founder of Breakthrough Films. She's directed three other highly regarded documentary projects, including The Devil Came on Horseback. Welcome to Coast, Ricky, and welcome back, Leslie.
Thank you.
Thanks, George. Great to be here.
Ricky, I want to start with you. What is the reaction so far to the Netflix series from critics, from the public, and, from Netflix, I guess?
Well, we've had an amazing response. We were in the top 10 trending on Netflix for, I think, around 10 days, which is some pretty stiff competition. So that's been incredibly rewarding. And I think Leslie will tell you she's received maybe hundreds or more emails to her sharing stories. People have been inspired and just a great sort of overall response. So it's been great to know that people are watching.
You know, I told you we had an earlier conversation, and I told you that I was trying to figure out how are they going to visualize this. It's a pretty... You don't have stock footage of, consciousness going up to heaven or whatever, but it's a beautiful film. You did a great job with making us feel that the visual elements go with the storytelling, and the narratives you got from these people are just so powerful. I wanted to know if you, Ricky, had any strong feelings about this topic before you started working on the series.
Well, first of all, thank you for saying that, because it is a quite beautiful series, and I think that was really important to us, that it was elevated, and that we, sometimes this topic can be a little sort of silly, and people don't take it seriously, and the production value is kind of, laughable, and I think that was very important, that this felt as grounded and reflective of people's real experiences. Because they're very emotional, and they're, people have some profound experiences that are shared in the series. Going into it, I really was not someone who thought much about it, this notion of consciousness continuing on or living outside the body. And I read Leslie's book. I know Leslie, and, but she's such a thorough reporter and investigator and, researcher. And so she makes her book is quite compelling. And I think, I was very interested in the serious nature of it, and that there is a department, the Division of Perceptual Studies at UVA in the medical school, where there are doctors who've been looking into this idea of consciousness for decades, up to 50, for the past 50 years, some of them. And, they study reincarnation, they study mediums, they study near-death experiences and psi. And I think that to me was very compelling. And then we traveled around to Europe and around the United States, and there are serious people who are looking into this, and that's sort of the grounding for the series.
Leslie, when you wrote the book, Surviving Death, did you think of it then as a possible movie or series? And tell me how that happened, how you made the leap from the book to the series.
I really wasn't thinking about it as I wrote it, George. I mean, I was just focused on, writing this book. The answer is no, I never did. But once it was done, and there was like a year, once you turn it in at Random House, you have to wait maybe 9 months before it comes out. I started to think about it then, and I had people I knew that were connected to the field, and I actually knew Breakthrough Films, and I knew Ricky because we had worked on projects before. So it just turned out that, they were interested. I mean, I went to Breakthrough Films. I spoke to Ricky, and she had other team members there. And Ricky was the one that took it to Netflix. I had nothing to do with that. But I at least got them interested. And I have to say, I'm so pleased with the way they work. And we work so well together that I can't really imagine wanting to have turned my book over to anybody else. So I feel really fortunate that they were interested in it.
Your interest, as we'll learn in the series, is not only professional but personal. Many of our listeners here will certainly remember the name of Bud Hopkins, a, a talented and successful artist who later became a hugely influential investigator of alleged alien abduction experiences. He coined the term missing time. You two were close. You were with him when he passed away. Can you describe that experience and tell us, is that when you really started thinking about this subject for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I had thought about it before. I was very interested in the cases of young children with memories of past lives, and I'd studied a lot of those cases, the work of Ian Stevenson. But that experience of actually being with someone at the moment of death, when they take their last breath, was something I'd never experienced before. And it really did have a profound effect on me. It just seemed so sort of surreal and hard to believe that this could happen. And you just can't, I felt in the space of just not being able to comprehend it, how somebody can just be there one moment and then be gone. And it just seemed to me like, it's just, what is going on here? It just was, it is a feeling of being in a surreal kind of incomprehensible space. And I don't know if, I think other people who have experienced it will probably understand what I'm talking about. It's hard to communicate it. But it did touch me very deeply and sort of was very provocative for me, putting the tragedy of it aside, but really the element of wanting to understand more about what was going on, because I've experienced that. And Ricky also knew Bud for many years. So I think maybe that connected, that whole nugget of this cut connected to her as well. Right, Ricky? I mean, Ricky had done a lot of filming of Bud Hopkins, actually, prior to his death. So,
I think the series is not heavy on, you're not beating people over the head. You tell the stories, you let people tell their stories. And you, for example, you point out, well, there are other possible explanations for this or that. Mediums, for example, we cover mediums in episodes 2 and 3, and you will introduce critical ideas that, well, maybe people learn this stuff on Facebook. You're doing a session with somebody and connecting with their dead relatives on the other side. Maybe these mediums are charlatans, because there certainly have been people like that. Did you, Ricky, set out to not be too heavy-handed and allow people to sort of wade through this on their own and make up their own minds?
Yes, very much so. I mean, this to me is about asking questions and not about trying to convert anybody or trying to prove anything. The questions themselves are fascinating, and the way people experience either death or questions about it, whether it's a lost loved one and trying to communicate, or a reincarnation case. These are all provocative questions, and I think the series approaches them in an intellectually curious kind of way and allows people to, have these very authentic experiences in the series. And the last thing I think Leslie would agree we'd want to do is, well, I would say for the series itself, is to not convince anybody of anything. It's really to ask questions, and hopefully you watch the series and you walk away asking more questions.
Leslie, the idea of consciousness, it's sort of a buzzword in the UFO and paranormal worlds these days. People will just spout out, well, I think consciousness explains how these things might be interrelated. Can you give me sort of a capsulization of what we know about consciousness now? And is that what moves on? Is human consciousness what moves on when our physical bodies die?
That's a big question. I mean, I have to say, as far as I'm aware, we really don't know very much about consciousness, as far as I understand it. At least the scientific community and the philosophers will basically say we don't know what it is. That's one of the interesting things, is that I think when people argue that consciousness is created by the brain and it's just a matter of neurons firing things, and then when the brain dies, there's nothing left, that's really more of a theory than a proven fact, as far as I understand it. But, I'm not an expert on consciousness. I'm really not. But that's my perception, is there are many scientists, and we feature some of them in the series, who take the position that consciousness is not generated by the brain, but it's more like the brain is an antenna, and that consciousness is something much bigger than our physical brains, and that there are experiences people have that illustrate that fact. If they can leave their bodies when their brain is essentially dead And they can go on a journey and they can come back and talk about what they heard in the room, even though they had no capacity for hearing because they didn't have a brain. You know, you have to question what is, how can consciousness be created by the brain if it functions when there is no brain? So I think it's, there are a lot of provocative questions like that. I don't think science, nobody has really solved the mystery of consciousness on that level.
You know, some of the examples, the stories that are told, the personal narratives, especially like the first episode that comes to mind, this physician who's basically drowned in South America, and she's underwater for 30 minutes or something like that, and then she's dead, she's gone, and yet she wasn't. You know, that it kind of raised goosebumps on your arms when you listen to her, because she's so credible and it's so emotional at the same time. You have some great witnesses for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. Ricky, do you want to comment on that case? Has gotten so much attention, the very case that opens up the whole series.
I mean, it was very important for us to, as you said, have credible people who are not, you know, she didn't go, she was kayaking in Chile, you know, I think over 20 years ago now. She wasn't seeking attention. She certainly didn't think she was going to die. But she had this profound experience. She is a spinal surgeon. She's a doctor. And, you know, her understanding of death, medical death, is when the body, when the brain stops functioning, when the body, when it dies. And she was underwater for over 30 minutes. There were a number of witnesses, looking for her. She was on the bottom of the sort of this waterbed, after having gone over a cliff, a waterfall, and she had this incredibly vivid experience, and she came back, and she, as she says, she should have been brain dead, but she wasn't, and she shares an experience that has been studied by Dr. Bruce Grayson at the UVA Medical School in the Division of Perceptual Studies, and he catalogs these very similar kinds of near-death experience phenomenon in such a way that there's a pattern to these people who've had these experiences, that they're not sort of anomalies in some ways, that they kind of fall within this study that he's done in these patterns. So there's, you know, they're similar. There is, and what does that mean? We don't really draw conclusions, but it just raises questions.
You know, there are her story in particular is amazing, as many of these near-death experience cases that you cover in the first episode, how people can know these things when they are effectively brain dead. I mean, that really does refute the idea that consciousness exists in the brain. Right, Leslie?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was saying. And I think the other important component of it, because, you know, especially in the series, we're very concerned with the characters themselves, the human experience, how it affected them. I think the other really important element about near-death experiences is the profound effect that they have on the people who experience them. It absolutely changes their lives forever. And it's not easy for every person when that happens. So that's one of the things I also loved about the first episode is that the filmmakers visited the center in Seattle, the International, it's IANS, International Association for Near-Death Studies, and there's a social worker, Kimberly Clark Sharp, who works there, and you really, you know, we get a sense from the people that are there and that it's not easy for everybody to die and come back. You kind of think, the literature so far has sort of shown this as being this wonderful, blissful experiences, and you come back and you're never afraid of dying anymore. But it's really not that simple. You've had a trauma by actually dying in the first place, and then you have to integrate a whole new reality into your life. And it affects your relationships, and it affects a lot of things. It's not always easy, but it's such an upheaval that's also another thing that sort of points to the profound reality of it, is that it's something that really leaves a lasting impact on a person. It's not just like having a dream or something, you know, it's real. Some of them say it's more real when you're in that world than it is in the physical world. And that's how vivid and profound it was for them.
We're talking with Leslie Kane and Ricky Stern about the Netflix docuseries Surviving Death. When we come back, I want to get into reincarnation, memories of past lives, some of the other compelling stories that they've dug up for the series. We're talking with Leslie Kane and Ricky Stern about their fabulous, credible docuseries that's on Netflix now. It's called Surviving Death. Has a lot of compelling evidence and testimonials. One of the things we're going to touch on in the next part of our program is these incredibly detailed memories of past lives that kids have. And there are some really compelling and persuasive cases. How the heck could these kids know these details about other people's lives? And in the series, they track some of these cases down. They reunite the kids with people who were their families in a previous lifetime. It's pretty amazing. We're going to get into that and also touch on mediums, how credible they are, and the amount of scientific evidence there, scientific interest there is in the pursuit of these subjects right now. We'll be right back with more Coast to Coast AM. Leslie Kane, before we leave the subject of NDEs, near-death experiences, I would remark that in the series, you do touch on the idea of how advances in resuscitation, in saving lives, has had an effect on the number, I would think, or the frequency of near-death experiences and NDE reports that are made. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, I would certainly think so, because if you think back to, 50 years ago or something, we didn't have the kind of medical sophistication that we have now to revive as many people when they're dead, basically. They're clinically dead. So, yeah, we're much more able to bring people back now than we used to be able to. And so there's an increased, I'm assuming there's an increased quantity of cases because of that. There's just more people that are coming back and are able to talk about what they remember and experienced. I think it definitely, there's cases are increasing because of that, or they have increased. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Ricky, why come back? Do you have any answers to that? And what is the pattern of people who have these experiences? They're on the other side. They see loved ones long gone, and they're really digging the experience. And then suddenly they have to come back. So who tells them in general, and what's the reason that they have to come back? Are they given a reason?
What people recount, it's a range, but they often feel they're being told that they need to come back, that there's something left that they need to finish, that there's a purpose for them to come back. And they all feel themselves, in some cases, feel sort of a pulling in their back into their body. I mean, the experiences are different for each person, but there is this sort of, and maybe Leslie can speak to that, but there are definitely these feelings for some of the people we spoke to, that they needed to come back to do something, that there was more for them to do in their life.
And Leslie, it changes them, as you were saying, in pretty dramatic ways. I mean, they come back with a greater appreciation for the planet, environmental sensitivities, a more loving approach to relationships. Although, as you point out in the series, a lot of them end up being divorced. Their lives change so dramatically that they can't, they often don't stay with the same partner, and they want different things.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it changes the life path that a person is on. So the things that meant something to them before might not mean as much to them after the experience, and then new things will mean something to them, and they may feel drawn to a completely different kind of work in their lives. I mean, certainly that kind of happened with our character, Jose, who then became an artist as a result of his experience. The character, the Mexican male that we covered in the series, I mean, he went on a completely different path after his experience. So I think it just has so many different ramifications for people. And I think the other point that when Ricky was talking about why they come back, I mean, I think sometimes, it's funny because so many of them describe not wanting to come back because it is such a beautiful place that they're in, and they feel sometimes conflicted about it. And they're even either pushed to come back, like Pam Reynolds was, or they go back because they're told or realize that they have a purpose here, like Ricky said. But the other thing is, I think when they have kids, it's even more, they even feel more urgency about coming back. I mean, so, you know, there's a whole range of reasons for it. But, yeah, it is really, really incredible the effect it has on people's lives.
You know, they start painting, they take up music, they're just a different person. So, in a sense, people could argue about whether a near-death experience is real for what happens on the other side. But what happens on this side is certainly real because the changes
right.
are dramatic and real.
And I think they often they become more interested in helping others a lot of the time, too. I think they feel more connected to a bigger reality, and they feel more motivated to dedicate their lives to helping people. I mean, it's hard to generalize it because, as Ricky said, they're all different. But there are sort of these common threads that tend to, you know, run through a lot of the cases. And that's another one, is to try to be of service. There's more of a sense of wanting to be of service, I think, after an experience like that.
It certainly takes away the fear of death for them. And maybe they're
Definitely.
Coming back to share that, you know.
I think that is a really underlying commonality of everyone. They all will say that it takes away the fear of death. Absolutely.
Right. And I just will say, Leslie, and this is an important point to make, that we're in no way saying that death is an answer to anything, that this is really, you know, we want to be clear that we're not, that we're saying life and living and being on earth is really the primary focus of the, and people who have had these near-death experiences are because, you know, this is unintentional. And so it's important to make that point.
Is it wishful thinking? You know, I know for a lot of us, we don't want to think about dying. We just kind of put it in a corner of our brain and lock the door, you know. I'll deal with that some other time. But, you know, the critics to this would say it's wishful thinking. It's a fairy tale. It's not real. We're just making it up and looking for evidence to make ourselves feel better about the whole thing. Ricky, you first and then Leslie on that idea.
Well, I mean, I think if you're talking about near-death experience specifically or just generally.
Or just surviving.
Surviving.
Surviving death, yeah.
No, I mean, I think that's why, you know, the series looks at it from all different angles. I mean, you know, certainly we all would hope that there's maybe something more. If you lose a loved one, you wonder what's the point? What does this all mean? And you hope on some, you know, that you would maybe be reunited at some point in some capacity. But that's why the various ways in which people are exploring this idea of consciousness, this idea of life going on after death. It's from all different kinds of perspectives. And it gets into, as we were going to talk about, like reincarnation. So just looking at you know, whether it's near-death experiences or people trying to communicate or looking for signs with loved ones or the notion of energy continuing on, which people might say is like a ghost-like experience when you've had this sense that someone is in the room with you, that you've you know, what happens with energy that we're made of when we die, and reincarnation, and what these incredible stories of our past life memories that these young people have had that we profile in this series.
We'll share some of those. Leslie, why don't you recap at least one of them? You know, the little boy who, I guess there's an age range for kids who have these memories of past lives. They start drawing pictures and they have memories. They just suddenly blurt out their name in a previous life. I had a different mommy, that kind of thing. And their parents freak out.
Yeah, it's very, very difficult for the parents. I mean, one of the difficult elements, and it happened to both the children that we profiled in some depth in the series, is that they have these horrific nightmares. And the parents cannot understand that the nightmares are really frequent. And basically, they seem to be reliving the experience of their death from their previous life, especially the little boy, James Leininger, who remembered dying in a plane crash in World War II and, you know, remembered the whole thing of his plane being hit, plane bursting into flames, and then he crashed into the water. And he would have these just, you know, he wouldn't even awake. They described him curled up in his crib. This is just a little kid in diapers who could barely talk, you know, shrieking in terror. And they said that the way his parents described it was he was sort of in a ball and then pushing up with his arms like he was trapped in something and trying to get out. And he eventually put words to it, and even at first, but eventually he would say, "Airplane crash on fire, little man can't get out." And he was screaming that every night almost in these nightmares. That's just one component of it, but that's... So, to illustrate the fact that it's not easy for the parents. And in this case, the mom kind of realized, well, maybe this is a case of past life memories, because he was saying other things and remembering things. And the dad could not accept that this could possibly happen. It was against his religion. So every time his child came up with some fact, he would research it to try to prove that it was wrong. And every time he did that, he proved his son was right, until eventually he was able to figure out actually who the person was that the child was before, because there was enough information for him to do that. But his goal was to try to prove that this couldn't possibly be a past life. And he ended up proving that it was a past life, and he actually made peace with it himself and came to terms with it. So part of what I write about in my book, and we also interview them in the series, is the journey that the parents go through is just as interesting and important as the journey that the child goes through.
And the dad in that case, he was a cop too, right?
Well, that was the other case.
That's the other one. Okay.
Hammond.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
This dad was just, he's just a business guy. His name is Bruce Leininger.
That's right.
And he just could not accept that this could possibly be the case, you know? He looked at things through a scientific lens, and you know, this isn't happening to our child. It's impossible. I don't believe in that.
And there's no way these kids.
Another explanation. That's what he thought. Yeah.
There's no way these kids are using Google to find out information about these long dead people, like the Hollywood producer who was reborn in the.
No, I mean, this little boy was two when he started to have these memories. It was right at the time he first started to talk. He couldn't even read, you know, he'd never been exposed to any of the stuff that came out of his mouth when he had these memories, none of it.
And the Hollywood producer, you know, now if you look him up, he is on the internet, but before this case became known, Marty Martin was really, you know, not someone who was known and would have had any kind of a Wikipedia or any kind of a Google presence. And so, yes, now if you look him up, he's there. But they really had to go and piece all these little, you know, clues that their son, this is another case, their son was giving, you know, in his same kind of thing, same nightmares and terrors and remembering little pieces here and there. And it took going to the Academy of Arts and Sciences library to determine who this bit player was in a film that their son had been talking about.
I don't want to leave reincarnation. Maybe Leslie, you and I can come back to it, but I did want to ask Ricky, you about mediums, because that's in two of the episodes you deal with mediums. And that, of course, is a field that's had a lot of charlatans and fraudsters over the years, over the centuries. So were you, as you're dealing with taping and recording those segments, are you on high alert looking for any kind of trickery?
Yes. In a nutshell, yes, absolutely. And I think, again, you know, working with Leslie, we were vetting who, and she can tell you a little bit more about, you know, if you're going to go look for a medium, precautions to take. But we were trying to go to some of the best mediums who have reputations. And, you know, there is an organization that works with mediums called the Forever Family Foundation, and people donate their time. It isn't always about charging a lot of money, and you know that people who truly feel that they can connect with spirit or medium will donate their time sometimes to help people who are in grief. So, I mean, it was a very difficult process, because certainly we don't want to promote fraudulent mediums. We certainly want to ask the questions and make sure that people who are vulnerable and in grief aren't being taken advantage of.
One of the mediums that is featured in the two parts is this lady with the short blonde hair who comes over to the U.S. Mm-hmm. and and helps this one family reconnect with dearly departed dad. And she shares, she gets some incredible insights, very personal stuff that you would think, this is un-Googleable. And then Leslie, you and Ricky in the series, you find out that some of it was in fact Googleable.
Yeah, it was actually the sitters themselves, the family members who were receiving the reading, because they were the ones that recognized the information that was being provided to them. Actually, there were four people who had that experience of recognizing the information as being on their Facebook pages. So that was a very difficult situation that we found ourselves in and never expected that to happen.
But it's a very honest presentation in that you take it the extra step to show, it is, it is possible. It's not saying that lady is a fraudster, but it's trying to offer, this is a possible explanation for how she got that info.
And I think it's also saying, you have to be careful. You have to, if you're going to see a medium, you don't want to share, Leslie was like, when she was researching this, you don't share your email. You have a friend email for you. You do everything you can to protect your identity so that the person can't look you up, so that any information that and the information should be very specific to you and not general. You have a dead loved one on the other side. Well, of course you do. That's why you're going to see a medium. But, and that's some of the precautions that, Leslie, you can talk a little bit more about it, that, you want to take to make sure that you're getting, protecting yourself.
I tell you what, Leslie, we will talk about it on the other side. We got about 30 seconds left with Ricky. Ricky, can you tell me if Netflix is thrilled enough with this to do another series? Because I would think with these great stories that you collected, you could do another six parts and never stretch the pool of information.
Yeah, there are so many stories pouring in. We don't know yet, but we're hoping. Someone suggested the title. Maybe it was even you, George. I don't know. We were talking before, but Surviving Death Again, or
Surviving Death Again.
Yeah, I think people are really interested in when you do this. You talk to friends. Everybody has a story. Everybody has something that they've experienced that has made them wonder. Maybe they're not wholly convinced. Maybe they don't think about it too much. But you just scratch the surface, and everybody has said something that makes them just wonder.
Ricky,
what happened?
Thank you. Love the series. Great work. I hope we have you back on again, and good luck with season two. Thanks, Ricky Stern, for being here. Leslie Kane will stick around with me for the next hour, talk about some more of the evidence they dug up.